Hello and welcome to Sit for Speaks, the podcast for public finance professionals. I'm Ursula Dale and I'll be hosting today's episode. On today's episode, we'll be joined by Richard Lloyd-Bithell, Senior Technical Manager at SITFA, who will be discussing the upcoming revisions SITFA has made to the Treasury Management and Prudential Codes and their impact on local government. Also joining us today is Rizwana Tabasum, Research Analyst at World Bank, who will be discussing SITFA's work to strengthen public financial management in Bangladesh. Up first is Richard Lloyd-Bithell. Hello, welcome Richard to our show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
So SITFA is opening new consultations on its Treasury Management and Prudential Codes. Most of our local government listeners will be familiar with these codes, but to give our other listeners a little bit of context, can you explain briefly what the two codes are for?
Absolutely, no problem. So if we look back all the way back to 2003, the Prudential Code was introduced as part of the Local Government Act in 2003 and for other devolved nations under various legislation. What that replaced was quite a rigid system of capital credits, which were controlled by central government. What the framework essentially established was a very, very flexible framework, which we don't really see in other public sector organisations. It's really a truly unique, flexible system for capital investment that we see in public services, not just in the UK, but I think globally as well. What it really does do is give local authorities the flexibility and the decision making to have real control and decision making over their capital investment. But it also provides a lot of support and illustration of what the legislation and considers to be prudent activity within it, a number of definitions and guidance that come with it that support local strategic asset planning and the proper management of those assets, and also looking at what is affordable and proportionate for local authorities. The Treasury Management Code is very, very closely aligned to the Prudential Code. What this allows for is effective treasury management, so investment, cash flow, money market, capital transactions, and making sure that there's effective control framework over those risks and activities, and helping local authorities have aim for the pursuit of optimum performance in those. That's really the definition of what we consider to be treasury management activity within a local authority context. But fundamentally as well, borrowing as well, the controls around borrowing and managing risks around borrowing and investing. One thing that is important to recognise from a local authority context, that SITFA as a regulator of the code, local authorities have to have regard to both the Treasury Code and the Prudential Code.
Great stuff. So what are these consultations aiming to do?
So I think the important thing that these consultations are aiming to do is look at the background and the context of what we've seen over the last 3 years. If we look at the information, the data that's come out, the Public Accounts Committee report, the NAO report, what I think these consultations are aiming to do is really provide clarification and strengthen what the provisions of the Prudential and Treasury Code are. One of the key aspects of the Prudential Code is what we probably colloquially call paragraph 45, which had a definition of borrowing in advance of need. Now, if we talk about borrowing in advance of need, which is in the legislation, that essentially means, in very simple terms, not borrowing in too far a time horizon for when you need to invest in capital and improvements to services, buildings, or all of the things that local authorities need, assets they need to deliver services. But also expanding on that definition, not borrowing in advance of need primarily for yield. This is also to look at the commercial aspect. Now, we've seen a lot of commercial activity from local authorities over the last 3 years. I think it's very much out in the public what the figures are. You know, billions have been borrowed and invested in commercial and primarily for yield investments in local authorities. So what we want to do is really clarify this definition and set out what we consider and what the Prudential Code considers to be prudent activity. So looking back to core business of local authorities, investing in services, borrowing at the right time so that people get the best deals on interest rates and they secure affordability for local authorities, and not taking undue risk with taxpayers' money. I think what we want to encourage people to do is really strongly consider these activities in relation to their capital strategies. I think an important aspect of all of this is how we really report on service investments, commercial investments, and of course what we'd consider to be treasury investments. Now, we've looked at a number of different changes that have happened over the last few months and years. If we look at PWRB changes, which is the Public Works Loans Board, which is a lender from central government to local government for the financing of capital programmes, they have tightened their definitions. And whilst the Prudential Code is not driven by central government policy, it is driven by what we consider to be undue risk to taxpayers' money. And the level of risk that has been taken on by the sector can, in a minority of councils, I must add, could be considered disproportionate. So we want to make sure people are encouraged to robustly think about their capital strategy going forward. And one of the things that we are changing with that is how that is reported within capital strategies. We're looking at having clear definitions for people so that they understand and can measure their capital strategies against these various categories, and encourage practitioners to take a critical think around their investments. If we consider a lot of the attention, a lot of the various, let's say, criticism of local authority investment, they consider it to be in the realms of property, bricks and mortar, hotels, for example, to close their revenue gap. And we can see that the need that people have driven to that with funding cuts and baseline funding cuts, and the uncertainty and challenges that have come through COVID and various other local government funding issues. But what we want to do is encourage practitioners to think about this more robustly within the legislative framework as well, of what they can and can't do. To really add to that, in terms of property, it's not just property investments that we want local authorities to be considered, but also financial instruments and those kind of treasury investments, such as if you're entering into a pooled property fund, for example. You need to consider this, not just alongside the Treasury Code, but also the Prudential Code in tandem as well. If you were to say, especially if you're an authority in a net borrowing position, you need to be considering, okay, what's my level of borrowing? What's my level of investments? Is it right to enter into a high risk investment with my surplus cash? And whilst people might return to the argument of, in the Treasury Code, we have an order of investing and things you need to consider, which we call security liquidity yield. So first and foremost, protecting the security of the principal sums invested. Whilst there may be arguments to say, okay, we need to protect our principal against inflation, we want to encourage practitioners to look at these investments very, very critically and say, what is the risk exposure of not just our property investments, but also our financial and treasury investments? What is the risk exposure compared to the security and the principal inflation risk that might happen? But what we want to really change is having a robust framework that is first and foremost set are looking at the local authority's risk appetite, and everything else comes from that. So all local authorities are dealing with taxpayers' money. So risk appetites should really be critically looked at and considered to be low. So everything else should feed on then from that.
Okay, so in a practical sense, what impact will these consultations have on local government finance professions?
Well, I hope that there's a number of changes that we can make that will have a very positive impact on local government finance professions. I'll go through a few of the key ones I think are the most important. I think looking at how we report on investments is the most important one, providing that transparency and governance to the investments. The important aspect of that is, as I said a little bit earlier, is looking at what is commercial, what is service, and what is a treasury investment. And we are providing those categories to aid with reporting. And I think it's really important for finance professionals to take that on board, look at their capital strategies, look at their future plans, and look at what the risk exposures are, and look at what they're doing in terms of, will this grant me PWRB access? Will this be okay for protect the taxpayers' money? Is this commensurate to our risk appetite? And not just for property, of course, but continue on to those financial and treasury investments as well. I think another thing that we want to encourage, mostly within the Treasury Code, is the knowledge and skills that Treasury managers have got within the sector. If we look at quite a while back now, it feels, to when MiFID II was introduced, local authorities would have to either opt up to be professional investors, which would give them access to a wider variety of financial investments, and essentially so rubber stamp them as a professional investor. And that has a lot of implications on the level of advice that they get. What we want to make sure that local authorities are doing is that they have robust processes in place for the retention and the building of knowledge and skills within the authority. We understand the Treasury teams are under a lot of pressure to deliver. They've got big portfolios, they've got big borrowing portfolios, And we want to really raise the profile of the treasury manager to give their importance to the industry. The treasury management function is really the engine room of the authority. If you don't have cash, if you don't have liquidity, you can't pay for services. So what we want to do is really raise that profile and the importance of the knowledge and skills of those individuals involved in treasury. It's a very specialist discipline, and we want to make sure that on an organisational level, that the profile of that is raised to the very top.
There are some proposed changes to the environmental considerations within the codes. Can you explain more about those?
Absolutely. I think if we look back to the original consultation, we were considering having a separate policy for ESG. We had a lot of feedback, which we accepted from the sector, that this is a developing area. This is something that we need to slowly introduce. So what we have done is we've adapted the proposal. We're not introducing a separate policy at all. We're going to look at it as a small consideration within the risk management framework and give authorities the guidance and tools to help them build that consideration of the areas. And an important aspect of both the codes is that we're not influencing organisational policy or local policy. That is the whole point of the codes, that people set their own local policy. But we want to give people, start to give people the tools to make these considerations when investing. And also looking at how this is reported as well. We're starting to see more developments in this area and more robust tools to help people capture. But I think Treasury has a very important role in the ESG debate. If we look at the pension sector, for example, where arguably there's a far more mature consideration of ESG risks within investment, the investment managers do provide this information where they can, and we want to make sure that there is a further demand from the sector to start driving investment managers to provide that information to Treasury functions, not just the pension sector as well. They're both investing money. I think they both have the same considerations, and we want to really bring the Treasury and the local authority market up to speed with considering those ESG risks, should they be important, of course, to the local objectives of the council. I mean, if we look at the environmental risks that come with climate change and various other things such as social impact, inequality, these are very important things for local authorities. They're really part of the key business of a local authority to address social inequity, address equality, but also looking at the physical risks of climate change. We've seen drastic flooding in mainland Europe. We've seen a number of huge physical risks that look to be brought about by climate change. So I think absolutely, whilst it may be a slow introduction, it's definitely at the forefront of our mind to look at environmental and social and governance risks for investment.
Could you give your rationale for establishing more clarity on depth yield investments for local authorities?
Absolutely. What we've done within the code is, of course, we have clarified the position that it's not prudent for a local authority to primarily invest for yield and return. But of course, what we do not want to do absolutely is cause any issues on regeneration for local authorities. And we're under no illusion that successful regeneration projects often have a commercial aspect, to use common parlance, to wash its own face. I think we believe in good, proportionate, clever commercial activity and within a regeneration context. And we don't want to cause any issues on local authorities being innovative in that way. And we think the code successfully does that. And once people see the code and the context and the guidance, they'll be quite satisfied that if they do have regeneration projects with a proportionate level of commercial activity within them, that they can carry on and carry on investing in an innovative way.
That's all really interesting. Thank you. One final question is, how long are the consultations active for, and how can people submit responses to them if they would like to participate?
The consultation will be released this month. It will be active for 8 weeks. People will be able to submit responses to them via email, and those details will be on the consultation papers. We aim to publish the two codes in December 2021. They'll be applied for this year, but not retrospectively. So we don't anticipate anyone restating any capital strategies until the following financial year where necessary.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Richard.
Thanks very much.
That was Richard Lloyd-Bithell discussing SIPFA's consultation on the Treasury Management and Prudential Codes and their relevancy to local government. Now over to my colleague Cal, who spoke to Rizwana Tabassum earlier this week.
So thank you for joining us on SIPFA Speaks today, Rizwana. To start things off, can you tell our listeners a bit about yourself and the work that you do at the World Bank?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for inviting me for this podcast. I'm really grateful. My name is Rizwana Tabassum. I'm a professional accountant and income tax lawyer. I have started my career actually after completing my chartered accountancy course. I've joined GlaxoSmithKline Bangladesh, and I was the first lady in finance of GlaxoSmithKline Bangladesh office. And then I was very dreamy, and then I joined development sector and continuously actually working with different INGOs. Then finally, I joined World Bank in 2018. So that was actually, I was lucky because the moment I joined, that was the very precious moment for the World Bank, because the initiative or the current program I'm working, that journey actually properly started in that June 2018. So it was good for me joining this program since inception.
That's great. And so now you're working with SIPFA on a public sector project in Bangladesh. So would you mind giving our listeners a little bit of an overview of what the project's about?
Yeah, sure. So as you know, public financial management, the program or the project currently I'm working, it's public financial management reforms initiative actually taken by Bangladesh government, and from World Bank, we are providing the technical support. Public financial management reforms, it's a key component actually for improving the governance and accountability in Bangladesh. There were past efforts by successive governments, and Bangladesh is now well placed to increase government efficiency. So implementing these PFM reform initiatives, this journey started 30 years before. Then in 2018, we have prepared our PFM action plan, and that actually was approved by Honorable Finance Secretary, sir, in September 2018. Before that, we had the PFM reform strategy. So implementation of this PFM action plan and to work towards a future-ready PFM workforce in Bangladesh, three fundamental objectives really will be achieved through this work done by SIPFA, like the development of competency framework, then training needs assessment, and code of conduct for PFM professionals. SIPFA has done a great work actually by analyzing or reviewing the current state of Bangladesh, what are the gaps and how the professional officials can be equipped to run these PFM reform initiatives. And the gap analysis or the findings has already been shared with Bangladesh government, especially the Ministry of Finance, Finance Division. And it will be actually validated by a workshop. So then the real picture actually we'll see, we'll start implementing these like competency framework after the gap analysis, what are the requirements and how we can make capable the officials. So it's a great work. Thanks for you. The support from SIPFA.
Yeah, no, of course. And so, you know, you mentioned SIPFA's involvement in the public financial management reforms include a public sector skills gap analysis, development of a competency framework, et cetera. So why exactly is developing a competency framework so important?
So these PFM reform initiatives, it's not that easy. After these 30 years of journey, still you can find there are gaps and adequate behaviors, skills, knowledge and attitudes or the capability. That's a combination. No, when you actually develop the future workforce for implementation of a PFM action plan. So for that, it's really necessary because you need to have the officials as capable as they can compete actually, or like they can be comparable with the international standards. So comparing the international parameters, SIPFA showed us that these are the requirements needs to be done for making them equipped, well equipped for implementing this policy. So that's why it's the relevance is greatly related. And they also analyze the training need assessment and of course also the code of conduct analysis. So that's a combination actually, not only those analysis, only the current their capability or something, but what are the training needs to be done for them? What current code of conduct, what it says, how it can be revised or amended to make them a complete in nature. So that's that work has been done by SIPFA well perfectly.
Yeah, so I mean, future-proofing the future PFM workforce doesn't sound like an easy thing to do.
Yes.
So now, how is the project going and are there any milestones coming up with the PFM project in Bangladesh?
So as I told you, it's more than 30 years of journey, and like formally we have started it in 2018 after getting approval of the PFM action plan. And then in 2018, we got the board approval, the negotiation, all the formal procedures from bank. It's a P4R program, program for results, which is like kind of based on achievement for World Bank. We have some achievements, DLRs, we call disbursement linked results that disburse based on the achievements. So there are several milestones and altogether 14 components of Bangladesh government has to implement. And out of that, there are around 50 DLRs they have to achieve. So few milestones they have already achieved, which is really appreciable, like accounting function. They have standalone IBAS plus plus system, and that's working, and the various reports can be generated from the system. And overall, it has automation. Earlier, numbers or accounting reports, they had to depend on the manuals, but they have converted it into digitization. Then several milestones like Bangladesh civil service, all the officials get the pension. This pension management system completely brought under the automation and EFT coverage. So all the pensioners are receiving their pension via their bank account or like mobile financial service. So like they do not need to come to the office and take the money once in a month in the remote places or in the urban places. It's difficult for them to come and then go back with the pension. So it's fully online. If they have any problem, they can use help desk. They have that mechanism. They can lodge complaint over that website. So that's something huge, and still we are progressing to do more. And for this competency framework, after the validation workshop, we will start implementing this training need assessment or the competency framework. So that will give more capable officials who can actually sustain, who can continue to implementing this huge program. Then also PEPFA assessment, public expenditure debt assessment, that's also coming. We will conduct that, we will implement. Then SOE, it's Bangladesh state-owned enterprises. There are huge opportunities because currently these are regular monitoring needs to be done so that we can make them profitable. And ultimately, if they are making profits, it will be ultimately enrich government treasury, and government will ultimately able to ensure the service delivery. Those sort of lots of milestones we have already achieved, and lot more are coming, such as like internal audit function. It's very new in Bangladesh because Bangladesh government, they have external audit, but not internal audit function. High spending ministries also be brought under this unit so that continuously we can work on it, and then we can make this happen. We can actually ensure that in the ministries, departments or other agencies, they have a unit for the internal audit. And they can review or they can ensure the internal control system of the ministries, departments or agencies are properly executed.
Yeah, so it sounds really comprehensive across the public sector and a lot of modernization and development going on there. I think this is probably the most important question. What do you hope the project that SIPFA is working on in Bangladesh achieves?
Huge work has been done by SIPFA, and definitely Bangladesh will achieve a lot because this, the assessment or the detailed work has not been done before in Bangladesh. And this was done by following several processes like focus group discussion, and all the most of the government officials who have like enough knowledge, SIPFA, and with the help from World Bank, we spoke with them. We tried to gather their feedback so that and the competency framework or the assessment can give a complete picture of the Bangladesh. Bangladesh has two institutions who actually provide training on PFM, like Institute of Public Finance and then FIMA. So these two training institutions, they need to be more efficient to help government officials. The report estimated so far like 70,000 PFM staff in government. Equipping that number of staff with the required competencies actually will represent a major task for government. And the report also recommended that an approach that is based on starting small and growing, like initially starting from small, maybe a small group of people can be trained, then later for other ministries or departments. So maybe the starting place amongst the staff of all the staff, accountant general or auditor general, like OCG or CGA, we call. So like this implementation can be started from those. It's, as you know, Bangladesh actually currently is heavily administrative in nature. it revolves largely around kind of following rules and regulations. So this is also necessary in PFM. However, it's not sufficient for government to be able to carry out the PFM action plan successfully. So a change is actually must. And we also encourage the change management approach. So it's a kind of a changes slowly. You have to convince them. You have to bring them and then you have to show them that this is the aim we want to reach. We want to provide efficient service delivery to the people of Bangladesh. And ultimately, for ensuring those service delivery, you need to be capable well enough to do this. And FIFA actually showed in detailed report that these are the weaknesses and Bangladesh government need to actually add these sort of initiatives so that the institutions are built enough capable to run these PFM reform initiatives and they ensure service delivery in Bangladesh. So it's a continuous journey and training institutions in Bangladesh, they need to take the leadership role so that they can carry on and they can ensure that these initiatives are implemented properly and they can run the show in the days to come.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice takeaway. So just making sure that the government officials can run the show. Right, that's all we have time for today, Rizwana. Thank you so much for your time.
You are always welcome. Good to see you.
That was Rizwana Tavasum discussing SIPFA's work to strengthen public financial management in Bangladesh. You've been listening to SIPFA Speaks. Thanks again to our guests for joining us on the show. That wraps up today's episode, but we hope you found it interesting and insightful. And be sure to tune again in 2 weeks' time.